You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
And if the neighbors disapprove, well, they can go to hell.
Man, it is Sunday night. It is a party weekend. I'm Al Waterloo, and you're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio. Tonight, we got a little bit of a shake-up, a little change in the crew. We had to get a new release printed for our departure. Mark Heppner has family obligations tonight. But nevertheless, that doesn't mean I go solo because unlike a lot of people where they go out and fly, you know, they bring somebody along. Well, I need to bring somebody along for this radio show, otherwise it's a complete disaster. So let's welcome Pat. Pat, you there? Pat. Well, I guess not. That's pretty hilarious. Yeah, there you are.
All right. Maybe I was muted or something.
I guess. I don't know.
That's awesome. I'm some kind of pilot I must be, right?
Yeah,
no, but I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for coming. You know what? You've been on the show before. I don't think a lot of listeners know that.
No, it was a pretty early show. You tricked me, kind of.
That was awesome. That was that. You were on show number one where I was awkwardly talking into talking into a microphone in my hotel room at Oshkosh, looking at the mirror, and I was thinking, at the end of that show, I was just like, oh my gosh, what am I doing?
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I remember getting a phone call from you, and it was a prank call. At the time, I was flying for an airline, and you called me pretending to be crew scheduling, and I had just left work, and you told me to come back in, so that was pretty awesome. I wasn't too excited to hear from you, but once I figured out it was you, it was all good.
That was me in desperate search of trying to figure out ideas on what to talk about.
Yeah.
It's hard filling a radio show 2 hours with content.
It is, but I think you've come a long way. I've listened to some of the shows, and yeah, I think you guys have a good format here. So
yeah, well, I'm glad you could be a part of it tonight. It's going to be pretty slick. So, you know, there's one thing though that, you know, Mark always is on the show and he provides this thing that our listeners actually started hashtagging the SNC. Are you familiar with what that is?
SNC? No, I don't know.
That is, a quick little audit to make, see if you listen to the show or not. And you said you did, but I think you're lying because you would know what it is.
I'm not a big tweeter.
I'm just kidding. You have that's what we call the Sunday night chuckle. And Mark starts the night off, and it's usually a good or a bad night based on, whether or not the joke is funny or not. But we need a replacement. I was booed off the stage at the beginning of the show about a year ago from telling jokes. So we need a good joke, and I'm defaulting to you. Do you have one?
Yeah, I do, well, yeah, I'm familiar with what the Sunday Night Chuckle is, SNC. Sorry, I know we have a lot of acronyms, but here's one for you.
All right.
How do you know there's a fighter pilot in the room?
I've got no clue.
Oh, he'll let you know. Yeah. And that always relates back to the fighter pilot mentality. Gotta love that one.
Yeah. It's not bad. It's not bad for a newbie.
Yeah, I'll get better. Sorry.
Yeah, that's a lot of pressure on you tonight for that. So, I would call that a good B minus.
All right, I'm happy with a B minus. It reminds me of college, so you know, D plus B minus, right in that range.
Yeah, that's a lot better than what I did. I think so. A little bit of history on you and I. We actually went back. Our roots go back to college. And yeah. I could vouch that you were a much better student than I was. I was a solid C minus D plus student. And that's not a joke. We met on, I think, day one of aviation school, class.
And yeah, I don't quite remember how that went down. Do you?
Yeah, it was definitely on the bus. And, were in mirrored aviators. With dress pants, dress shoes, belt, suspenders, and a dress shirt and tie. And I was like,
well, I was trying to make an impression, and, you know, I want to clear something up about the aviators. I was wearing them before they became cool again, all right? And so I don't want you guys to have any preconceived notions about me just because I was wearing aviators.
That was awesome. That truly was awesome. That, and I was sitting there thinking, and then we started comparing. At first I was like, I identified you as my threat in aviation school. And, that saying that, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. Well, I think I moved over to where you were sitting on the bus and started talking to you, and you're like, have you ever flown into Bravo Airspace? And you're like, yeah. You're like, what's the longest cross country that you've done to St. Louis? I'm like, Yeah. It was just awesome. But then I think we really clicked while cleaning the University of Illinois aircraft training fleet.
And you know what? You know why? Is because whenever you have a common enemy, you just become friends. And the common enemy was dirty airplanes.
Exactly. And then it was, from there on out, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Always looking for ways to work the system.
Yeah, anything we could do to, you know, pay the bills and be around airplanes, even if it involved getting aircraft degreasers in my eyes, I was willing to do it, so.
Yeah.
That was a good time that summer.
Yeah. Oh, it was. It was pretty awesome. That was the summer, actually, that remember, you based, your dad had a 172.
Yep.
What was the call sign of that?
3475 Echo. I'll never forget it.
Nice. Was that the plane you first soloed?
I soloed. I got my private pilot's license in it. I did part of my commercial check ride in it. I flew it back and forth to college a lot. Every cent I could make went to Avgas. And yeah, that one summer I had it down there and, because it had sustained some wind damage and we had to repaint it, the insurance adjuster, who was really cool, said, hey, you know, we're going to have to reskin this and paint it, so why don't we just go ahead and pay for most of the paint job and you can just repaint the whole plane. And at the time, it had the brown and orange 1970s colors. So
those are the best.
Yeah, and I redesigned the paint job, and then I convinced my dad it was the right thing to do not to have a blue plane with orange interior, even though that's our alma mater's colors. And, you know, I redid the interior that summer while I was down at college. It was fun. So it turned out real nice. I bought one of those kits and redid the interior myself, and had a lot of sentimental value, that airplane.
Yeah, no, that was an awesome airplane. And, like, I remember when you said redoing the interior, he kept it at Frasca Field, and at nights we'd go to the hangar. More you than me, but we'd go out and work on your interior. So there is a great little point. It doesn't take that much money to put a new interior in your airplane if you've got like 172.
What? No, that's true. You can buy a prefab kit and everything.
How much? What did you know? Do you remember how much that was?
The kit was, I want to say, $2,500, but it was leather seats. You know, they come prefab, and you just take all the seats out. And all I did with the plastic, I bought a couple new plastic pieces, which can get a little pricey, but I really just stripped and repainted the plastic with a special spray paint, And that was really all there was to it. It was a new carpet that fits right in there, and you know, it's all aviation approved.
That's awesome. So that what was the name of the company?
You know, I don't remember. They were out of Pennsylvania, I think, somewhere in the Northeast. But I think if you Google their name, if you Google just prefab airplane interiors, you'll probably come up with a couple companies that sell the kits for the specific model airplanes.
That's awesome. I'm trying to find them. That was cool, because a lot of people that I start flying with, they talk about flying a new airplane. The first thing they need to do is put a new interior in, and they think it's going to be thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of dollars. I don't really think that was exactly the case.
Nowadays it might be a little more expensive just because prices go up. But yeah, if you're willing to do it, and if I had to give an estimate of how long the whole project took, probably from start to finish, I'd say maybe 75 to 100 hours. But I worked on it, a couple hours a day, and it was maybe not even that much because I only worked on it a couple hours a day for maybe 2 months. And it was done, so.
Yeah. Was the company called AirTex?
Possibly. It doesn't ring a bell, but it was so long ago, I don't even remember.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. That was a good time. I liked doing that. That was, certainly learned a lot from that. So anyway, we went all the way back to college. Now you moved out to Las Vegas, pursued a business dream. And then once that business dream ended, you became an airline pilot, which is hilarious.
Yeah, it was kind of a reverse type of thing. I still want to, I'm an entrepreneur and I want to be successful in business, but for a while there I was taking a break, and it was always hard to explain to the captains I was flying with, what brought you here to fly, and I said, just always kind of wanted to fly, bigger, faster planes, and I'm just doing this for fun for a little while. I mean, I didn't let on right away. It was just for fun or just for a break or anything like that. But, it was just, it was an interesting experience, and I'm glad I did it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Oh, that was cool. That was pretty hilarious too. I was out in Vegas visiting you. We got an IPC check done, and it was hilarious how your business, your career had your day job had come to an end, and you made the decision. It was like on Friday, and then like next Tuesday, you were an airline pilot. You hadn't flown
in
6 years. It was hilarious.
I know you're out to get the IPC done, and this is funny because I think you got a lot. I'll hand it to you. You got a lot of business sense yourself, and you kind of pushed me to say, hey, why don't we just go, walk your application. Let's go walk your resume in over at this place. And we did that. And I got a call the next week and interviewed and hired. So that was pretty fun. That was serendipitous, to say the least. So.
It was. It was awesome. It was it was networking at its finest.
There you go.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so that's something that's pretty slick. But, since you're a pretty business savvy person, do you have a favorite aviation business?
Yeah, I've got, I wouldn't say I'm like gung-ho on aviation businesses, but if I was going to choose one, I'd like to be in the FBO business.
Yeah.
I like the FBO model. It's real estate related. It's selling fuels, something airplanes need, and you can branch off into a lot of other areas. A lot of FBOs also have a maintenance business, and they some of them even have other charter services tied into the FBO, but starting with the FBO, you find the right field, location, location, location. I think you could have yourself a really stable long-term.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Term profitable company.
Right.
So what about you? Do you have a favorite aviation business? I mean,
I would have
to go flight instructing.
Yeah, I certainly do quite a bit of instructing, and I always thought a flight school would be where it's at if it's done right. And the more I do flight instructing, I realize I don't know if it's necessarily the best business model. And I think I could make a go at it and do all right, but I think where it's really at is in aircraft management. And that is a nice business model in my opinion, because you have you have a group of clients. It's not very capital intensive. And, it's, you know, as you grow or your company grows, as your customers grow and they use aviation, probably, you know, you're probably going to have some business clients there where people, you know, fly their planes for business. And that's a really cool thing. You know, it's not a big business, but it's a good business.
Yeah, I think you're, you had a good point there. It's not very capital intensive. You can actually start that, you know, with no capital almost, whereas FBOs, I guess, you know, you kind of got to have some money to get into the game, whether it's a lease or buying a property or a business or something like that. You need a good chunk of money to get started.
Yeah, totally. That's the problem with aviation is it's so capital intensive to get started in anything. And, you know, if you're going to do anything with operating airplanes, it's, you know, it's pretty tough. There's some other great businesses out there, like 4Flight or a couple of other little apps that, you know, are their own little thing and still are great businesses. But, you know, yeah, it's still not bad.
Technology, yeah. Software, like, I mean, look at Garmin, you know. They started grassroots and look where they are now.
Yeah, exactly. There is a, I just got a text message in and somebody said, you know, based on a aircraft or a flight school, what's the cheapest somebody can get a private pilot's license?
Cheapest.
Yeah. Let's think about that one a little bit more, but we'll answer that in hangar talk. How's that sound?
Yeah. Yeah. Get that down for later.
Yeah, sounds good. So that would be pretty good. It's a I think there's so many different ways to do it, and I think the element of getting it to the cheapest is thinking in the most creative manner that you possibly can.
I would agree.
And all that. But, you know, there is a, speaking of FBOs that you really like, there is a, another FBO company, Signature Flight Support, which I'm a huge fan of just, because we're a signature based tenant with our King Air. And, I think you're a pretty big fan as well.
I like Signature. They've got a good, business there.
Yeah, totally, totally. So it's they're the cool thing about them is I don't know what's happened, but they've kind of like changed their tune. They really started to like become, you know, more, I guess, active, if you will, and really started this big expansion model. Have you taken note of any of that or seen any of this where like signatures are popping up?
It's interesting you say that because I had been in a signature FBO recently, and I happened to pick up BBA Aviation's little pamphlet that they give to their employees. And, I was reading through it and they talked about some of the other businesses they own. Signature is just, you know, is one of the businesses they own. And I had noticed, some of the new acquisitions that they had made. And yeah, they're expanding. They're buying existing FBOs and turning them into signatures and getting them the benefits of the signature brand and their network. So yeah, I've noticed a little bit of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a big man behind all that is our guest today, Mr. Patrick Sniffen. He's the the vice president of marketing of Signature Flight Support Worldwide. He's going to enlighten us on his own aviation experience and kind of what's going on at Signature. It's a, it's pretty awesome. So why don't we go ahead and try and get him on the line, and we'll see what's going on with Signature. Alright, so as we get Patrick on the line here, we'll see what's going. Pat Brennan, are you still there?
I'm still here.
All yep. Right.
Hey guys.
Alright, Pat, Trick, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Alright, excellent. Thanks for coming on the show with us tonight.
It is my pleasure.
Alright, excellent. It's a, it's really nice. Hopefully we're not interrupting your Memorial Day weekend too much. But,
Not at all. We've got movie night going on here in Central Florida and having a great time with the kids.
Awesome. That sounds great. So why don't you go tell us a little bit about yourself before we kind of get into all the signature stuff and all that. How did you get into aviation?
Wow, it's a long journey. Quite honestly, it started, not to bore everybody, but I think it's interesting to me that my first air show was with my dad, who was out of the Navy at the time, and he took me to, probably his heresy, he took me to a Thunderbird show, and to hear those the F-4 Phantoms go overhead, you know, just screaming overhead, I said, oh, one of these days I want to be a pilot. So through a bunch of twists and turns in my career in advertising and marketing, I had a customer called Jet Aviation, actually, down in West Palm Beach. And a job came along that fit my profile very well, and I became the VP of marketing for Jet Aviation North America. And then about 4 years ago, started with Signature. But from a very young age, I was always enthralled with aviation. My uncle was a T-6 Texan pilot instructor, and flew out of Texas during World War II, training pilots going over to Europe. So, nice. Long family.
Yeah, that's really cool. So going into that, the Thunderbirds operating F-4s. Now that's kind of a throwback. That's got to be a pretty cool sight to see.
And they were loud. I mean, I just remember it was startlingly loud.
Yeah, the louder the better, right?
Absolutely, and it's still that way today. Louder the better.
Yeah, yeah. There was one time where at the Chicago Air and Water Show it was the day before the Air Chicago Air and Water Show, and I was at Wrigley Field, and the Thunderbirds were actually practicing, and what they were doing is they kept like buzzing Wrigley Field in the middle of a ball game, you know, it's just like under the speed of sound, and the whole crowd, you could tell that they were coming because the bleachers would just start erupting and like clapping, and you're like, you know, it's just as the guy's throwing the pitch, so you're like, oh, this is kind of awkward to hear all this applause, and then bam, they'd show up. Oh, man, it was awesome.
And it was a strike.
Yeah. A swing and a miss. Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah,
but absolutely. So how you're working on your private pilot's license right now, and that seems like it's been a pretty fun journey as well.
It really has. And, you know, I have to thank Signature for that, for helping me make my dream come true. They've got a program in place to assist folks that work for Signature, and mainly at the general manager level, for the people that are actually running the FBOs, to go out and get their private license so they can experience firsthand what it's like to fly into, to taxi onto a ramp, and to receive services at an FBO. So for us, it's a little bit of a taste of what we provide every day to people that do this both professionally and privately. And I've had a fantastic almost 2 years getting my license, and I'm very close to doing my check ride at this point. So it's a dream come true. And when I'm up there, it is absolutely paradise. I was able to take my girlfriend on Friday flying, and we flew over Lake Apopka, which is adjacent to the city where she grew up. And to be able to show her, you know, the town that she's lived in all her life from the sky, I thought was a really special treat. Something you can only do in an aircraft, and I think there should be more pilots out there, and that's what Signature's mission is, reaching out to grassroots now.
Yeah, I think that's great. You know, that's a testament to Signature to be able to say that we want you guys to see it from our customers' eyes. So, if you could tell, what are your aviation goals? I mean, you're gonna get your private pilot's license, and then what? What's your goal with aviation?
Yeah, I think it certainly wouldn't be to make a living, because for me, it's the joy of it, and it's an escape from reality. You're focused on one thing and one thing only, and that's flying an aircraft
sure.
You know, control the environment you're in. But I think really where I'd like to go next is to get my IFR rating and then seaplane and a tail dragger sign off. And, you know, I think that will probably accomplish most of my goals. However, I think in this kind of, we'll call it, you know, a pastime for me, but it, once you get into it, then you want the next best thing. So who knows where it's really going to lead.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. So, what's your role at Signature?
Yeah. So, I'm the VP of marketing for Signature's, now 116 locations around the world.
Wow.
And, for me, it's super exciting. I get to blend the love of aviation and flying with a passion for creativity, and I like to call myself Signature's chief cheerleader. And we do a lot of outreach to the community, especially when it comes to grassroots Many of your listeners maybe were up at Oshkosh, and we had a display up there for the very first time. And we're big supporters of EAA and AOPA and the Recreational Aviation Foundation. And I think for some of your listeners, that'd be really an interesting thing for them to check out. It's called VRAF, Romeo Alpha Foxtrot.
VRAF.
V, like the.
Oh, the.
.org. And these guys work on a volunteer basis to keep back country and grass strips open for private aviation. So you got a lot of tail draggers and home builds flying in and out of there, a lot of huskies, and we get absolutely, you know, nothing but the joy of helping people promote private aviation out of this, and that's really our mission, reaching out to grassroots and to the industry, and we really want to create more pilots and keep private aviation going, and you know, we have some challenges in the industry right now, so.
Yeah, definitely.
We're doing our best to do what we can.
Yeah. So I've noticed, if you follow, Signature on Twitter and Facebook, you know, there's some pretty exciting, announcements that Signature has been doing. And you guys are a pretty, I guess, rapidly moving company. Acquiring like different FBOs all over, and wasn't the latest one in Van Nuys?
Yeah, so Van Nuys is an interesting story. We just announced we have agreed to purchase the assets of McGuire Aviation, and you know the McGuire family's a big developer out in that neck of the woods, and it joins their footprint to the Signature footprint at Van Nuys, and it will allow our customers, large and small, to really take advantage of a number of different real estate options over there and where they want to, you know, taxi up to and receive their services. So the McGuire facilities are absolutely beautiful, and we're excited to have them as part of our network. And quite honestly, Signature's mandate really is to grow, either organically or through acquisition. And we just were proud to win a new request for proposal out at San Jose at SJC, which we're looking to complete in 2015. You know, I think is more interesting is really what we're doing on some of the smaller fields, like at Sonoma Jet Center and in Green Bay at Jet Air Group, where we are partnering with independent owners and operators to add them to our network, such that they can avail themselves of our sales and marketing, our purchasing power, and it really expands their horizons as independent operators while they can still maintain and run their own business. So, really it's many different ways to assist operators of every size.
Now, you said it was called the Signature Select Program, right?
Yes, sir. Correct.
So what kind of, what do you think the kind of benefits that, you know, some of the pilots out there might see by some of these independent FBOs becoming part of the, you know, the parent group?
Oh, that's a great question. Really what they can take advantage of are all the benefits that Signature has to offer, including our Signature Tailwinds Pilot Rewards Program, which is open to all pilots, whether they're AVGAS, you know, flying a 172 like I do, or they're, you know, in a Challenger flying on Jet A, for all of the services that they need or feel that they purchase, they earn points. And, it also goes to any, services outside of fuel, that are, you know, like a fee, they would get, points on those as well. So you're awarded
okay.
No matter what you buy or where you buy it.
I gotta say, yes. I love the Tailwinds program. We're members through our King Air, and man, I'm saving up my points to buy a Harley.
Yeah, baby. That is my other love affair is my Harley. So, I completely understand that.
Exactly. Oh, that's excellent. So there, you know, working on your pilot's license, what do you think is like one of, during that process, what's one instance that you can think of that, you know, you pull up to an FBO and you can directly, you know, it helps you do your job better?
It's absolutely as soon as you cross that yellow line onto the ramp, right?
Right.
And you have somebody there marshaling you in. I've flown into a couple of FBOs where you've had nobody show up, nobody comes out of the line shack, and you're basically left to, you know, marshal and park wherever you can find a spot. And it, in one time, I was literally closed in, boxed in by a number of other aircraft, and I had to wait until, you know, there was some departures. So I think once, when you pull up and you have a line guy greet you, there was an instance up in Ocala where I flew in, and the line guy met me there, he chalked me, and had a cooler full of ice water. And man, I'll tell you, it was one of those ballistic Florida summers. And there was nothing better than that cold bottle of water. And I think it's those simple things. It's really the little things, you know, maybe they've had a chance to pull up your tail number in their accounting or in their, you know, their CRM system, and they know who you are. They know you by first name. I think everybody wants to be recognized by name and felt and treated like they're very special to that FBO, no matter what they're flying or how much or how little they buy.
Yeah, that's a good point there. So you're in a little plane pulling up, and I think a lot of times there's this myth out there that these big box FBOs are not piston friendly, you know, and true or false?
Well, I got to tell you, we certainly have been very, I think, open about the fact that about 4 years ago, we had a change in management and signature, and prior to that change, we probably helped set that stereotype in place. But if you take a look at what we've done over the last 4 years, and I think a lot of our competition is starting to emulate the programs that we've put in place, or even, you know, someone like me that might buy 10 gallons of fuel and not take too many services. We welcome all aircraft of all sizes, regardless, and you will have the same treatment as you would in a Gulfstream as you would in a 172. And I think that, you know, Signature did a good job of pushing away that business in the past, and we've done a really diligent job in outreaching to that pilot community to bring them back to Signature. And
I can definitely attest to it. I've flown in, and you know, no different. The service is great. You know, I was not pushed off or anything. I was real happy with the service. So you guys have done a good job.
Well, thank you. We've got a lot of great people on the team. We have dedicated a lot of resources, both in terms of financial and personnel, in getting our service up to a world class standard, no matter, you know, again, what the size of your aircraft is. And we partnered with a very well known 5-star resort company around the world, Romeo Charlie, which is probably all I can say. Who helped us develop our own internal program to really look at what are the elements of service that our customers are looking for. And at a long day of flying, you know, you're hot, you're tired, you're hungry. You know, you may need some light services on your aircraft, or you want to just go in and put your feet up in a comfy couch. And that's what we're there for. And, you know, if it's 2 or 3 in the morning or it's 1 or 2 in the afternoon, it's 24/7 at most of our locations, and we're there to help you.
Yeah, that is such a refreshing thing. You know, I, as a flight instructor, I try to, you know, teach people how to practically use aviation. And the one thing that I've noticed is that, you know, people, when they get their license and they don't know how to, you know, interact with an FBO, and, you know, there's actually this kind of like fear that exists, and to, you know, I make it a big point of stopping it, like, you know, nice FBOs such as Signature when there's one on the field, or if not a more premium one versus something else, because all of that of what you're saying is, you know, hits all the sore points like while you're flying, and not that there's many sore points, but you know, there's like things like fatigue and hunger and different things like that. And really the last thing you want to do when you land after a 3 or 3.5 hour flight is, you know, pump your own gas or try to figure out everything. And it's such a nice job. I think you guys really capture that like, you know, just show up and we'll take care of everything for you. That's so refreshing.
And I think, Al, there's one thing, you know, you also have to think about when you're looking at choosing an FBO. And where the FBO companies, and Signature is not alone in this, but certainly the baseline has to be safe operations. especially on the ramp, for everybody involved, whether it's our personnel or you as the pilot or your passengers in your aircraft. And the folks that are spending resources, time, and effort to train their people and retrain them, and to have, you know, safe margins around wingtips and, you know, taxi areas and all that kind of stuff, and knowing where their fuel trucks are, their, you know, their ramp vehicles. All of those processes and all of that safety training and making sure that you're able to get in that aircraft and fly when you want to go without, you know, an incident or damage to your aircraft or personnel, that all takes resources. And I think in some cases that is overlooked. And, you know, it's one of the things we'd like to get the message out as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's incredibly important. And, you know, from an instructor standpoint, once again, there's like, you know, you can see there's a level of consistency when you show up to you know, an FBO like signature. But have you ever run into the instance where here's where the inconsistencies lie, in my opinion, but are the private pilot that's flying a Cherokee or something, and they don't know hand signals or they don't know, you know, proper ramp etiquette. Do you guys ever run into that where, you know, something happens where it shouldn't?
No, sure. Absolutely. And I think it's all how you respond to that situation. And in most cases, if you know, you're in a situation where it may become unsafe, you really get that aircraft to stop in place and, you know, shut down. And then we'll gladly move you, or move your aircraft to a safe parking position. But yeah, there are some folks out there that are flying around and don't have the proper ramp kind of knowledge, and we do our best to handle them safely and keep them from hurting themselves or others or other aircraft.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can imagine that, with all that heavy equipment around, it's just that should be priority one, and that's how everybody wants to be. Hopefully nobody wants to be at an FBO long because they're going on vacation. It's kind of a stopover point or going to a business meeting. And, that'd be a bummer if, something like that happened. But, you know, it's, I think for, trying to teach people from an instructor's point of view on how, what ramp signals are or marshaling signals or, where to park if there is nobody. I think that's such an important thing. For our listeners to understand and try to go out and find and things like that. So, you know, as a matter of fact, I think I'm going to send out a tweet a link to the AIM with air marshal hand signals.
I think that's a great idea. I mean, there's a lot of places where you'll fly into that are, you know, maybe a little more rural in nature and they're not as busy as you would find in like a metro area with crowded ramps and taxiways and whatnot. So I think that would be a great learning tool for a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely.
So I was just going to jump in there with a quick question I had. So is there anything exciting, you know, for the future of Signature that maybe you can talk about? I don't mean to put you on the spot or anything, but any new developments going on or any news that you can talk about?
Sure, absolutely. And I think, we're working very diligently on a new program for the GA community, which, you know, we'll probably be talking a little bit about out at AOPA. We also have some programs already in place for AVGAS users, and that information is available on our website. And, you know, I would highly encourage, if you haven't tried Signature in a while, to go ahead and give us a shot again. And, there's more announcements coming out, and I think it's going to be a really busy year for us. And, we've got some great things that have recently been announced, that we're tweeting and Facebooking about. And I would highly encourage everybody to, follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook, because that's our primary mode of distribution and news. And every day there's usually something new going on in the Signature network. And you know, we'd love to have folks post up and if they've had a great experience, or even if you want to tell us something, you know, we're open and we want to hear your feedback, and it's the only way we can get better is through listening to our users. So I think those are cool things. Yeah.
That's a great point. So you brought up, you know, how active you guys are in social media, and can you explain why social media is such an important part of Signature's business?
Yeah, absolutely.
Elaborate on that a little bit more.
I was actually tweeting with you as you know, I was having some Skype difficulties and power and that kind of thing. And quite honestly, for us, it is a new generation of pilots that are up and coming through the ranks. I'm using my ForeFlight app, you know, in the cockpit. You know, I'm tweeting, I'm Facebooking, I'm constantly, you know, looking for information that way. And I think most of us that are, you know, active right now in training or, you know, are flying for a profession very much live off of our handheld device or our iPads or your tablet or whatever. So we want to be able to provide information in as real time a nature as possible. And there is no better way really than social media to get that word out.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I gotta hand it to Al for a second, cause he's done some pretty great stuff just being able to get a hold of people or meet new people or, you know, make connections and, you know, have great guys like you on the radio show through social media. I've never seen anybody utilize social media as much as Al can.
Yeah, it's a vibrant community, be sure.
Yeah, it's amazing. I should take it upon myself to get more involved in it.
You should.
Listening to you guys.
Al could give out like private tweeting instructions. This is a private thing.
That would be how to maximize your aviation experience via Twitter.
Exactly.
Al, can you make a new podcast on that, please?
Sure, why not?
That'd tweeting be great.
And you're only going to find it out by signing up for TwitterPath.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. So, what's something that's really surprised you in your position at Signature and throughout the years? I know in the last 4 years that you've kind of been pushing you guys have been really pushing for like open arms in the aviation community. But what's one thing that's really kind of caught you off guard in a good way?
In a good way? I don't know if anything's really caught me off guard, but I continue to be just amazed that the sense of community in the private aviation arena, especially when you go to like the AOPA summit or you go to Oshkosh and you can sit down with a guy from like, I had a fantastic conversation with a guy out of Anchorage that flew a medevac King Air, and we sat there and chatted for like an hour, and his stories about flying and learning to fly back in the, you know, the early 60s and going through Vietnam and as a helicopter pilot over there. And, you know, the stories and just the history that is associated with aviation and the things that have been possible only through aviation just continue to astound me. And I think the stories are surprising to hear very unassuming people that have had these amazing careers in aviation. And for me, it's personally inspiring. And I would tell you the one thing that does make me very kind of wary is the continued emphasis that we're hearing on a potential pilot shortage. And then I look at some of the regulations that are being placed upon private aviation, you know, such as like Proposition 65 out in California with, you know, 100 low lead, and these user fees and whatnot that will continue to really put a lot of stress on our industry. And I think you take those couple things in combination and it just really shows you how hard we have to work to keep our industry alive and to spread the excitement that all of us feel when we're up in the cockpit.
Yeah, definitely. So what are some things on the FBO level where that might be felt? Obviously, I guess less fuel would be bought.
Yes, absolutely. You know, as the price of avgas continues to rise, as do all of our fuels, folks like Redbird that are looking into some alternative fuel, you know, like using 100 unleaded MoGas. They're working on some things, you know, out of Cessna with the 182, you know, with diesel. So I think if we can move away from you know, the 100 low lead avgas into things that are more sustainable, that are less, you know, environmentally impactful, that are not, that may be produced on a higher kind of quantity as opposed to batch production like 100 low lead. So the refineries are able to put more out. Maybe there's some things in biofuels. you know, Signature is working with GAMA, you know, the General Aviation Manufacturers Association to, you know, explore those things. And I think the whole industry's got to sort of pull together and figure out the best way forward for, you know, a replacement to 100 low lead at some point in time.
I totally agree. That's such a hot subject. And, you know, it seems like there's a lot of people out there right now either working on electric airplanes or even the light sport airplanes. That could be where the value is really extracted in those airplanes. And like I said, with Cessna, with their you know, Jet A running 182, I mean, that's gonna be pretty prominent. But I don't know, what are some of your thoughts on where more efficiencies could be made and with engines, things like that, or our dependence on 100 low lead?
Yeah, I think it's there's got to be enough people willing to buy these aircraft or to retrofit their existing aircraft. I think they've got to, you know, create that marketplace to justify sort of the development of these alternative technologies. But I'm personally a fan of the light sport kind of, you know, thing where you can get your gallons per hour down. I mean, it certainly flies in the face of what I would want to do on Signature's behalf, as you can. But as a private aviator, you know, at the end of the day, it's coming out of my wallet as well to be able to keep my airplane flying. So, you know, less is more in that case, but I think we need more pilots to make up for that as well. We need more people really enjoying this as not only a recreational thing, but as a tool to extend their business as well. And, you know, if you read anything that NBAA puts out on behalf of the industry, contrary to what the media would say or some of the things that the administration has said, is it's not a bunch of fat cats out there flying around in, you know, the private jets to go on shopping trips. It's, on the contrary, they have a statistic that something like 60-something% of all private aircraft use is used by middle managers and teams going out to set up new business. And airports and communities increasingly are under pressure to cut budgets, and we've seen some airport closures, and obviously the big fal-de-ral with the control towers that everybody's had to endure.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to spread that message that GA is important to everybody, no matter who you are, whether you use it or not. You're certainly in some way dependent on the business that folks that fly general aviation bring to your community.
Oh, definitely. And that's one thing that I really think that's totally underlooked. And, you know, even just with flying our Kinger around and, you know, stopping at airports and things like that, you know, an airport is such a huge, economy source for a community, right? You know, there's a lot of business going in and out of there, whether they know it or not. And, you know, I've noticed that, that's, you know, without an airplane for some of these companies, their business would not exist or be at the level at which they are today. And that's like such a huge deal that, Patrick, you said that fat cats is, you know, totally not the case. It's such a small percentage, and, we really need to keep that going. And, you know, FBO has really kind of helped that efficiency. You know, corporate aviation is all about efficiency, and FBO is, like Signature, definitely enhanced that level of efficiency for others' businesses.
Well, thanks, Al. I mean, and certainly as a, you know, weekend warrior like myself, I don't really want to stay at the FBO. I want to get there. I want to use the facilities. I want to get to my aircraft, which has been fueled and waiting for me, and maybe a cold bottle of water stuck in the cup holder, you know, and get on my way to where I really want to be. And I think that's our mantra, is how do we get you in and out as quickly and as efficiently and as comfortably as possible?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's such a, it's really nice. And I think there's a lot of people, like the people, pilots can sell their families on aviation by enjoying the premium FBO experience. So, you know, like, you mentioned services, when an airplane shows up, what are some of those services that, you know, a family might partake or use when they show up to a Signature?
Sure. So, obviously, for the most part, you're going to need fuel. You know, if your aircraft is equipped with a lav, you're going to want to have that taken care of as well, and maybe have some water and ice put on board. You know, in your King Air, you certainly can carry some catering and whatnot, and we can arrange for all of that. In a lot of our locations, we have a crew car that, you know, the family can run out to Subway or whatever and grab a bite to eat, get refreshed, head back to the airport and get out of there on their schedule. A lot of our locations now have maintenance facilities, so if you had some squawk that needed to be done, we can get out there and take care of that and get you ready to fly again. So it's really anything that is necessary to keep your aircraft flying when you want it. Those are the things that we provide.
That's all good. So I wanted to jump back in there, and I don't mean to go back to a previous question, but I had a follow-up about Proposition 65. Some people may not understand what that is, so can you give us a Reader's Digest version? And as a follow-up to that question, is there any chance that, you know, a switch to a new alternative fuel might actually save some money on operating costs? Because, I mean, diesel's not as expensive, it's less refined. You know, can you give us any insight into that?
Yeah, sure. So Prop 65 is really a it's not aviation specific, believe it or not. It's a lead warning that is what this community, the political action committee, I guess, for lack of a better way, is asking everybody to put out there as an FBO if you're selling crude low lead. Well, you know, obviously we are part of the Prop 65 defense coalition signature is with a number of other FBOs, both chain FBOs and independent FBOs that are lobbying against this, and we are certainly very much in favor of working with the government and folks that are developing alternative fuels. I mean, I think we all recognize that. But it's got to be done in a judicious kind of manner and one that's prudent and thought out and something that isn't going to create, you know, chaos for our industry. So we need to do this in a measured and effective manner that makes sense for everyone. And,
yeah,
you know, lawsuits and those types of things don't help us, as an industry, you know, move ahead. So we're,
okay.
But to answer your second question, as far as direct operating costs go, you know, I think if you could do something that is at the refinery done on a much larger scale, I mean, obviously, the higher the amount, the lower the price. And I think that if they were able to come up with a rational replacement that wouldn't create the necessity for everybody to go out and change out their engines or retrofit them. If you could do that in a rational manner, I think it makes a lot of sense. But there's a heck of a lot of folks out there flying on a hot low lead.
Yeah. There really are.
Heck of a lot of airplanes too, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I think it goes down to the bottom line of what we talked about earlier of educating, you know, the consumer of how you know 100 low lead would benefit their community. You know, so let's take Santa Monica for example, like worst case scenario, you know, that you know, a lot of people, you know, might not like that, or the you know, 100 low lead's bad for the environment, or even the airport itself is, you know, considered a hindrance. It's just all about educating and showing, you know, the community what that airport does or what that fuel type does, and you know, to enhance their, you know, property values or communities, things like that. So
at the end of the day, it's all jobs, you know, and in an economy where we're looking to create jobs, aviation is probably one of the last bastions of the great American manufacturing dream. So all of us should be doing what we can to educate our communities and our legislative leaders. And I think we were able as an industry to do a great job with the sequestration and keeping, you know, ATC towers open and showing how critical having controlled airspace in our communities really is. And my one big fear was we would have some incident, you know, the day after one of those towers had shut down. And thank goodness, you know, none of that actually happened. So it is all about education. It's about grassroots. It's about folks going out there and lobbying their local county, city, state officials to promote the cause of general aviation. And I highly encourage everyone on the call, if you're not already, join AOPA, join EAA, and get involved in your local chapters so that you can help spread the message and keep our airports open.
Yeah, I would have to second that. I would say aviation's one of the most passionate group of peoples, and if anybody can get it done, it's the aviation group, but they still need, you know, all the support they can get from everybody involved.
Absolutely. And it's when you let your guard down that something that you love dearly gets taken away from you. So I think we all have a duty as aviators and lovers of our industry to keep that message alive.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's such a such an important dream. You know, that was the cool thing about Oshkosh this year. Even though I wasn't able to attend, you know, this is the cool part about Twitter and aviation, Facebook, is that, you know, people are starting to post pictures all around, from their experiences at the campgrounds and the air show and all that. And there are a couple of people that posted pictures that said, pictures that they got of posters that said, it's not over yet, don't give up, like general aviation is, you know, still strong, bright or something like that. It was a pretty cool message. I can't remember exactly what the words were, but for a marketing tagline, I was like, you know, I think people are finally starting to catch on and, you know, turn this tide.
I would agree with you. I mean, folks like Icon that are out there developing, you know, the new seaplane and, you know, all these guys and girls that are working on new developments, you know, the LSAs and, you know, other alternative methods, you know, the flying car, the Terra Fugia. I mean, I think all of that innovation, that spirit of creativity and love for flight, it's still alive and it's vibrant. And I think that we're starting to see, you know, some of the great things in schools now where they have magnet programs for aviation and aeronautics. There's a big one up here down here in Florida, in the Sanford, Florida middle school. That is a magnet school that is partially tied to NASA.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, you've got folks that are just entering their teenage years and excited about aviation. And we've had scout troops out and, you know, explorers and civil air patrol, you know, squadrons come out. And I think everybody should do that, you know, adopt a local kid kind of group and get them involved in our industry and show them, you know, the passion that we all enjoy for flying.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that was, that's one thing, you know, Signature actually did was kind of, help adopt, kind of launch a flying club. You guys were very gracious to help sponsor our, startaflyingclub.com. We had a scholarship that is, in the works. Well, it's announced and we've got our winner out in, Wilmington, North Carolina and a runner up in Jefferson City, Missouri. And we've just about to launch the first two flying clubs out of that. You guys were gracious sponsors of that. So, you know, it's cool how everybody starts helping each other, and we're even a little flying club airplane is so dependent, and it's, you know, at the airport economy level, it's such a big mover and shaker, even though it has 40-gallon gas tanks. It's just, it's pretty cool. And it's really nice to see that you guys recognize that.
Well, and at the end of the day, in many cases, and, you know, certainly not in all, but somebody might be flying a G650 during the day and, a Pitts on the weekend or, you know, even an old 152. They might have to get out and push, but they might be flying a 152. So you never know. And at the end of the day, it's all about inspiring, you know, people to do what we love to do. So yeah, I agree.
Oh, Tom, absolutely. There was there's one thing that I have to tell, and I wish I had a picture of it, but unfortunately I didn't allow pictures. And I go up to Duluth, Minnesota quite a bit and help new owners take delivery of their Cirrus airplanes. And one guy, he had a dream to fly into O'Hare. And there was, so we flew from Duluth all the way down into O'Hare. We pulled up into the Signature at O'Hare. And, you know, it was, first of all, it was pretty funny because everybody, you know, at O'Hare, it's a very transient FBO. You're just there, you're either picking up or dropping off.
Absolutely.
But, you know, it was funny because they asked, you know, the manager asked, hey, are you picking up or are you dropping off? We're like, "Oh, neither. We're just here for lunch and a tower tour." It was funny because so that you know they're like, "Oh, okay, you're not. You know, how many passengers are you bringing back from the terminal?" It's like, "None. We're just actually, you know, we're here just for fun, I guess." And we got to go all the way up to the top of the O'Hare Tower, and I wish I had this picture because you know here was a brand new Cirrus owner parked its signature, and you could see it from, you know, looking down on it from the O'Hare Tower. It was a pretty cool sight, and you know, there were, it was cool seeing all the business jets taxiing in over there. It was awesome.
Yeah, you couldn't have picked a more busy airspace to fly into.
Yeah, no, it was funny because there was a bunch of you know, there was this act, you know, there was a 747 kind of parked near the signature ramp, and you know, it's like at O'Hare, a 747 is no big deal, and you know, we showed up in a Cirrus, and it's like the little mosquito at the airport, and all these, you know, the Chicago cops and the line guys and you know, passengers in the FBO terminal, they all came out and were just starting to take a look at it and just asking all these questions and such, and it was pretty funny. It was just like you know, a total oddball out, the ugly duckling.
Well, it is a beautiful aircraft. It, you know, it just is a fantastic aircraft. I have a dream to fly in one day, so maybe someday.
Yeah, come on up. You should. We have our Leading Edge Flying Club out of the Palwaukee Airport, Chicago Executive, which you guys, we rent hangar space from Signature and have all of our airplanes based there. And next time you do a site visit, please come up and look us up, and we'll take off and we'll make the 5-mile flight over to O'Hare.
That sounds great. That would be a true thrill.
Yeah, exactly. So when you say you go on the road quite a bit for Signature. When you go on the road, what's your mission?
Yeah, in a lot of cases we're doing the sort of aviation shows, so EAA's Oshkosh, you know, NBAA, this year we'll be in Las Vegas. We do a number of shows in Europe and a couple in the Middle East and a big one down in Brazil called La Base, which is an absolutely amazing marketplace.
Wow.
Growing at a stellar rate. They have more aircraft deliveries out of any region outside of the United States right now, so Brazil is a quickly growing marketplace for us. So we do everything from small regional forums in, you know, on NBAA's behalf. We do NATA. We do a lot of things that really are focused on airport relations and government relations and, you know, keeping our industry in front of the government, as an important driver for the economy. And it's really about getting out, mixing it up with our customers and really showing the public face of Signature and getting the word out about what's available to them when they visit us. So that's my main mission when I'm out on the road.
Yeah. Oh, that's excellent. So it takes you all over the world, essentially. I mean, that's gotta be pretty cool. Do you ever have an opportunity of going flying when you're on the road?
I did get a chance a number of years ago to go flying in Switzerland off of a grass strip.
Oh, man.
We did E-Base in Geneva, short flight, you know, in a valley between these two Alps mountains, and, you know, it's just breathtaking. You get up to about 4,000, 5,000 feet in altitude, and you're in the snow and down below the roof. So it, you know, it's probably like flying out in the Rockies, you know, in a lot of respects, but that was pretty cool. And, in the U.S., the opportunity to go flying is obviously a lot easier. So, would like to go do something down in Brazil someday because the scenery around there is just something we're not used to seeing. So pretty neat stuff. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. That's really cool. So, you know, when you, going back to your personal experience with aviation, when you finish up your ticket, since you're so close, what's going to be your first flight?
Oh, I think I'm going to fly down to West Palm Beach to have lunch with my parents.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, there's North County Airport just north of Palm Beach International that keeps you out of their crazy airspace. and there's a landmark on the field that has a little cafe in it, so we'll pop in there and have some lunch and fly back up to Executive and park at Showalter. So pretty exciting. I can't wait to do it.
Are you nervous about the oral and the practical exam?
I'm not really. Being a perfectionist, though, is probably what I think it's a good thing as a pilot, but I also want to do it without any marks against me. So I think it's more about doing it 100% and getting everything right. Not really too nervous. I think the oral part is probably going to be more challenging. I think the flying part is, you know, there's just so much that you do, and your inputs are both, you have a physical input, obviously, and then, you know, there's a mental piece of it. And the oral part is just, I think, a little bit more difficult to remember for me. Just my personal makeup, I think.
Right.
No, and you never know what you're going to be asked, so.
Exactly. It's kind of that's the question in the dark. It's just a, but you know, you'll do great. And, you know, from my experience, if you just try to, you know, in your last couple flights, before your test, try to practice everything in a practical manner, you know, and, you know, that way you'll have experiences to draw from in the oral exam rather than just, trying to remember straight up theory. And, you know, you can just get that, oh yeah, I've done this on this flight or whatnot. It's when you start doing that, it's a piece of cake.
So I've been told, and the guys at Flight Training Professionals down here at Orlando Exec have been just stellar in getting me through the process. They're just Keith and Ed that run the place down here. They're just great guys, and you know, I can't say enough about Showalter, where they're based. Just fantastic people, and you know, it just goes back to why you love aviation, and it's certainly about the flying, but I think it's more about the people that you meet.
Right. Oh, definitely. You know, it's just, that's the content that we fill in our logbooks.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's, once you go out and you get your license, you do your first flight, is there any particular airplane that you have a dream of flying or getting your hands on?
Yeah, absolutely. Gotta be the P-51 Mustang.
Yeah. Nice. Choice.
The all time dream of dreams to fly the P-51, then second and only by the T-6 Texan, and then as an everyday flyer, well, that one's still up in the air yet. I need to count my nickels and save some pennies to be able to afford a Cirrus, but that certainly would be on the list.
Yeah, that's awesome. The P-51, what draws you to that? I mean, that's like a that's a total hoss. It's awesome.
Well, hey, it is the Cadillac of the skies, right? It is just, I think, still the coolest airplane ever built. And, the power that it had during the war, you know, close to jet powered speeds at that time. And still to this day, I think you could correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it is still the fastest single engine prop driven aircraft.
Yeah. Yeah.
So call me out on that if I'm wrong, but I believe that's the statistic. But,
yeah. I bet it is. Have you ever checked out Kermit Weeks' website or YouTube videos?
I've been there.
Nice. What a place, huh?
In Kissimmee. It's about a 45-minute drive from here, and had the special honor of going to an Able Flight benefit dinner down there, and he's got a magnificent collection.
Oh, it's amazing.
Four P-51s down there, and they're immaculate. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's got a cool video on YouTube of the entire process, from getting in the plane to doing the startup checklists and takeoff and doing low passes and everything. Cool video to watch.
Oh, I'll have to check that out after the call. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I saw an interview with him once. He said, somebody asked him, if you could be anybody else, be anybody in the world, who would it be? He said, me. And yeah. I'm like, I don't blame you, buddy. I mean, he's got quite the collection, and that's a cool place to visit for sure.
No, it is. It's just amazing the collection he has, from very, very old vintage stuff to, you know, P-51s. I think he's got a Grumman Goose in the hangar there as well, which is something to see.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, the cool thing is, like, he had, I think it was 5 or 6,000 foot crossing grass runways, which he
puts
cement underneath. So it could land his constellation, I think.
He's got a Connie out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the engineered surface grass strip. That's, I find that funny, but
it's awesome.
Amazing at the same time.
Yeah.
A brilliant guy, too. He's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And very approachable, too.
Yeah, that's excellent. We're trying to get him on the show. We're just trying to nail a date down, but it'll be fun to have him on as a guest on the Civic Flight Aviation Show. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I would recommend Lee Lauterbach from Stallion 51 out of Kissimmee as well. He's got some great stories.
Nice. We'll sign him up as well.
Absolutely. I think you get them both on. I think they could tell some great P-51 stories.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Patrick, before we let you go here, what's the best way that people can reach out to Signature and learn more?
I think really it's our Facebook page. If you'd like, visit us on Facebook at Signature Flight Support, and also at Twitter, which is at Signature FBO, and that's Foxtrot Bravo Oscar. Check us both on those two things, and then we also have a new website up and running by NBAA, which is the third week of October, and that's www.signatureflight.com, and has all the information that everybody would need about us, including all of our worldwide locations, a nifty little fuel price calculator, and some other goodies on there that everybody can take advantage of. But keep an eye on us. We've got a lot of good stuff to come.
Totally. Oh, there's always great updates. I'm an avid follower. I love it.
Yeah, we love that, Al. We appreciate it very much.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for all your hospitality. When we show up to an FBO and welcome us with open arms, it's great.
It's our pleasure.
Yeah, excellent. Well, thank you. We hope you, when you come up to Chicago Executive and you check out Palwaukee, please look us up. We'll be more than happy to take you for an airplane ride. And, we could beat the Chicago traffic and, when you have to go to O'Hare or Midway and we'll fly you down there. So.
Sounds good.
It's the best one.
Yeah, that 747.
Yeah, exactly. So. Well, anyway, thanks for taking the time out of your holiday weekend to join us and all. It's been a great time, and thanks for doing what you do. It's certainly making aviation a lot better.
Well, I'll pass it on to the whole crew around the world. And thanks, Pat, and thanks, Al. I really appreciate you having me on
the
show.
Thanks, Patrick.
All right.
Yeah, it's good talking to you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. All right. That's pretty, it's Signature FBO is a pretty, like, big mover and a shaker, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's great to have a guy like him who can, answer some questions, provide some industry insight, and, tell us what's going on with one of the biggest FBOs or the biggest in the world, so.
Yeah, no, it's cool. The one thing I didn't realize is how big they are, like, globally.
Yeah, they do have a global presence, 116, that's a pretty big number. It sounds like they're not done either, so that's a company to watch out for.
Yeah, cool. That's pretty cool because, there's not a lot of aviation businesses that are, like, growing, that are on that scale that are just, like, that are really doing a great job at growing and getting better. And every time you go in and you experience it, and I don't mean to sound like such a big Signature fan, but the truth is I am. Everywhere you go, it's just, it's awesome, and, you can really see the brand loyalties there, and, that's what all these, the people want, otherwise there wouldn't be 116 of them.
I'm a huge fan of their cookies, and so, and popcorn. If anybody knows a way to a pilot's heart, it's Signature, because they have all this free goodies, free food, so.
Yeah. It's pretty slick. They have a, one of the places, at the Signature at the Chicago Executive Airport, they have this candy tray, and they have like gummy bears and like fruit snacks. And I think they had Laffy Taffys and Dots. And let me tell you, I always had those right before the show starts, and my teeth were full of dots, stuck in them, right as the show is starting, and it's like,
If only it was a video cast instead of a radio show.
Yeah, there's a very important point why this is video or voice only.
Yeah, exactly. Then you'd have to dress up and everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, but it's good stuff. Yeah. I like the cookies. They always have these cookies and free water. I'll stop by. Sometimes I just stop by the local. I'm in Las Vegas. I'll stop by the local signature and just say hi to people there and grab a cookie, and you know they don't mind at all.
Yeah. No, absolutely. You're a pilot.
I'm not even flying in. Yeah, I'm not even flying in. I just come in to say hi and get some cookies.
Right.
Freeloader.
Yeah, a little bit. No, but I'm not a total freeloader. No. I bought some gas.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. At the Shell station. No.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's a, that's the really cool thing is that, you know, no matter what it's open arms. You know, from the land side or air side, and you know, it's definitely worth the experience. I had a student actually text message in, and we were flying out to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and we were trying to make it one day. We landed in Delhart, Texas, because they had self-serve fuel, and we landed there at 9:30 at night in the middle of the winter, and the TAF read some. And, you know, some wind, it was like 250 at 35, gusting to 50, like 3 hours from the time we were there. It's like dead calm. And there was also, you know, all these other like abbreviations in the TAF that you never see, like smoke and, you know, dust and stuff
blowing
like that.
Blowing dust.
Yeah. And so we're sitting there, and my student, it was such a perfect learning lesson. We're trying to find the... It took us an hour to find the self-serve tank on the field. It was pitch black, couldn't find it. And, you know, the self-serve pump was broken. And we start, you know, we finally get it working. And, you know, we're just sitting there and we're freezing. And I'm sitting there taking a movie, and I asked my student, I'm like, you know, imagine your students, or I mean your family, you know, flying them out to Arizona. And, you know, how they would feel right now. Going through this experience and telling them, you know, after you feel the airplane, it's dark and it's going to be windy and you're going to be going over the mountains at night. You know, it's like land at a signature FBO or a nice FBO and let them take care of all the stuff.
Yeah,
so like,
absolutely.
Rather than like freaking your family out and packing them up and like, oh, come on, let's get in the plane. Come on, let's go.
Yeah, I think you mentioned something pretty important is getting the buy-in from the other people you're flying with, because as awesome as it is to get your pilot's license, it's much cooler to have people want to go with you, share that experience, you know, you get to share it with people, and if you can't get their buy-in, you know, it kind of puts a damper on things, so do everything in your power to make it a really good experience for everyone involved.
Yeah, totally. It's awesome. So... but yeah, you know, another nice thing is, and I'm kind of mad that we didn't talk about this with Patrick, but you know, that the local economy at an airport, is so important. And, you know, to have a nice FBO on the field, they really, you know, they're up for doing business with you, and, you know, you're very important to them. And even if it's a 172 or a Global Express, it's just, it's really cool. And, you know, one of the things that I've found is that, you know, since they really want to do business with you, if you have any, you know, issues with price or, you know, there's something where you need help on, you know, just ask. And most of the times they, you know, they won't give it away for free, but, you know, they'll help you out.
Yeah, and I like that you said that they're a growing business in aviation. And they, I mean, the economy, it's, you know, it's no secret. It's really sucked, for lack of better words, but I think aviation needs a lot more entrepreneurs and a lot more smart business people, like the people at BBA and Signature, that they're not just coasting, they're aggressive, they're ambitious business people. That in and of itself will stimulate the industry.
Oh, totally.
You know, still need the customers and still need the buying power out there, but we need some smart business people too, and I'm glad to see that they have some growth plans.
Oh, totally, without a doubt. You know, that kind of brings me up to my next question, is that there are a lot of entrepreneurs out there, and a lot of them certainly had their hand in aviation. Some did okay, some, you know, failed miserably, but since you're an upcoming business person, do you think aviation is a good place to be an entrepreneur or have a business?
That's a great question, and I would say it just depends. Really, it depends on the entrepreneur, and it depends on the business model. You know, some businesses within aviation are a lot tougher to make work than other businesses. Like, you know, don't go into the airline business and not have a ton of cash behind you to compete against the big guys unless you've got a completely different business model. You know what I mean? You know, you're not gonna outmarket Southwest Airlines, and you know, you don't have the same route structure American or United have, so don't even try it unless you've got a lot of money to work with. On the other hand, there's businesses that like you said before, aircraft management with a good team of people focused on service and sales, then, you know, I think those are great businesses to be in.
Yeah.
They're low overhead, they're easy to get started, you can differentiate yourself. And I mean, look at the guys at 4Flight have completely, they've probably sold more iPads for Apple than Apple likes to admit, right?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, so look at that, you know, that's a great place to be an entrepreneur in the technology side of things.
Yeah.
So, you know, going back, I just think it depends a lot on the person and the business. And yeah, economic fluctuations take their toll, and they also see their big upsides in aviation. That's one of the challenges with the industry as a whole. But
yeah, I think that there's two things. I see a lot of people, you know, there's a plus and a minus with aviation being a business. And, you know, like we said earlier, it doesn't have to be a big business to be a good business, which is nice. And I don't really know many good, like, big businesses in aviation that are really good businesses other than, you know, like, you know, let's take Southwest Airlines, for example. Every other airline is kind of, you know, in bad financial condition, but, you know, Southwest seems to be doing okay, but still, you know, they do so much volume, and you know, who really knows what their margins are. But you know, there's so the plus, what I would say would be, is that there's a lot of passion in this. You mentioned this earlier when we were talking with Patrick, is that, you know, this is, aviation is filled with passion, which drives a lot of like I'm not going to quit mentality, which is excellent, because it's certainly hard. You know, but because of that, a lot of people like to have a business where their passion is, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're great businesses, you know, business people. And I really wonder if their business idea is scalable.
Yeah, scalability is a big challenge. I mean, we could have probably talked to Patrick about that big time, because they're a geographically diverse business. I don't know how their org structure is set up, but, you know, they're all over the place. So scalability is probably a big challenge they always face. And, you know, big airlines are, you know, and scalability, like you said, you don't have to be a big business. But one challenge I do see in aviation related to entrepreneurs is that for some reason, you know, it attracts the passionate people. But a lot of the talent is wasted in, unpassionate industries. I'm not saying that those people aren't passionate about what they do, but a lot of the business talent out there goes towards, you know, the sexier stuff, for lack of a better word, the advertising, the marketing, the technology, rather than the tried and true AV. It's a tough industry to attract people to, because it's highly technical, highly regulated, and, you know, it's tough to make it in the industry as a whole.
That's a good point. I think the regulations have a lot to do with it as well. You know, the barriers to entry are just so ginormous that, you know, you may be a great business person, but, you know, if you don't have a business track record, you know, you may be the best airline CEO in the world, but, you know, but nobody's ever going to find out, you know, just because of that, you know, through regulations.
Right.
You know, the FAA is not putting out new charter certificates or air carrier certificates. You know, they're only maintaining the ones that they have, mainly due to the budget cuts at the government and stuff like that. But start on a flight school level where you could just start one up, it's still just a lot of money to get going, you know, mainly the rented airports, you know, at the Palwaukee Airport, Chicago Executive. It's just as much as it would cost to buy a 172.
Wow. Yeah, the flight school model, you know, you and I have talked about it a lot. Flight school, is it a good business or not? I think it could be successfully done. It is being successfully done by, you know, guys like ATP and things like that on a larger scale. It's tough to make money in that business, though. It's low margins, you know. It's an expense most of the time that people is considered discretionary, so it's just a tough market to make any money in. But I think if you can differentiate yourself and somehow, you know, tweak the business model, if there's an entrepreneur out there willing to go at that, then I think there's some money to be made, but it's got to be done on a scale basis, you know, like
right,
a bigger scale.
Like a John and Martha King.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good business right there. The e-learning business is huge, and it's growing rapidly too, and I think that's just going to be the future of aviation and ground schools.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I think that the flight school as we know it is dying, but flight school in general is not dead. Just gotta go through a revolution.
You mentioned something before, I don't know if this is, how common this is, because I'm not involved in the training world as much, but like virtual flight schools, you know, no real office location, meet your instructor at Starbucks and, you know, get your ground lesson done and then just go to the airport where the keys are to the airplane, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, I think that's there's a lot of good stuff in that. But you know, from like other side things, like the technology side, you could see a lot of people out there having a new app or whatnot. There's some people out there that, you know, like let's take ForeFlight, which is not a big company, but they're massive. You know, their market share is, you know, nearly, I don't know exactly what their market share is, but I would guess that it's, you know, outselling Garmin or FlyQ or Wingman. I think it is Wingman. Wingman.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. And, you know, by tenfold. You know, just based on the quality, the technology in it. And they're really just like ramping everything up and everybody else is just kind of like, caught awake.
It's much more accessible, you know. It's, you know, the Garmin used to have to buy expensive handheld or panel mount GPS, and now it's much more accessible. What other reason do you need to buy an iPad? You know, I was just looking for the last reason, and that was it. Got to justify the purchase somehow, right?
Yeah, go out there. What kind of iPad would you buy?
Well, you know, I have the iPad 2, the full size one. I'm mixed feelings about flying with the iPad Mini, but you've given it accolades, the Mini, right? I just like the full size because I can read it easier.
Yeah,
I mean that's better. But in the cockpit, it's kind of bulky.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's very bulky, and the interesting thing is that, you know, I always thought like, okay, you know what, I'm not too big of a mini person. But when I worked with my student out in San Francisco, Jacob Eiting, he had a Mini and he had a yoke mount, and like the way that he was using it, I'm just like he sold me on it right there. I was just like, you know what, this is perfect. And the size was excellent. You know, it's the perfect, you know, you can actually put it in the place where you want to put it, as opposed to balancing your big iPad, your iPad, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 on your knee.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'll take your advice. I'll probably end up upgrading. I mean, it's cheaper. It's cheaper too than buying the full size. So,
oh, totally. Yeah. So I think it's a good. It's definitely a good investment, and for flying, you know, and I think, you know, society. And forgive me for saying this, but society's at the point where you almost need like 2 iPads now. you know, if you're a pilot, 1, an iPad just solely for flying, and then 2, you know, your old iPad becomes your, you know, your second iPad, which 1, you can bring with you on flights for your backup electronic charts, but you know, while you're sitting at home, you probably don't want to be messing around with a mini iPad. Just use your old one. It's still perfectly fine.
I'll just re-gift it, and I'll look like a great guy.
You need all the help you can get.
Yeah. No, that's funny. Technology in the cockpit, yeah.
Totally. I love it. They had, so I recently was coaching a student on that, and mentioning how, Fourflight sold more iPads than Apple would give him credit for. He said, I strongly encourage my students to use Fourflight. If they come with Garmin or another one, I just say, hey, let's just make your life easier, get Fourflight, do this, and get a mini and do that. And, they actually go out and do it and they fall in love with it. But there's a problem that arises, is that they have to completely redo their flight bag. And I would love to see like a before and after picture of like a 1999 flight bag, and its contents versus a 2013 flight bag and its contents. What do you think the difference is?
Well, for one, the headset. I mean, think about the 1999 headsets.
Yeah, the little Lightspeed Denalis, the yellow ones. You remember those?
Yeah, well, there was also the huge, Lightspeed also came out with a huge headset that, they still kind of are big, but I mean, it was big.
Yeah, the big one, yeah, the like the full size.
The bulky, yeah.
Ugh.
That was nasty. I love the disgust you had. Actually, if I had my choice, this headset of headsets, now we're on the topic, seems to be pretty popular among pilots. I would look into, not the tried and true Bose, even though I love my Bose, just the straight up, earplug one where it goes around the back of your head. It doesn't even have a arch around the top of your head, and it's,
Clarity Loft.
Yes, that's the name of it, yeah. I would look into that. I've heard great things about it, especially on those hot summer days where you might be sweating in your ear cups and, or when it's freezing and you put it on, you gotta swap out ear cups. These are real easy to change out the earplug part of it, and I just hear nothing but good things about them.
Yeah, that'd be pretty sweet. There was a couple at the airlines, a bunch of people had those. It was so nice. I brought my own headset. The ones that the airline gave, they were like nasty. David Clark's. I mean, you're supposed to wear this like David Clark that you were, that you learned how to fly on in a 152 with like no mic muff and everybody's coughing into it. There's like,
somebody sweating it for the last 5 days.
Yeah, you got like random ear juice just like, and you're supposed to fly a transcontinental flight, from New York to LA.
Just see like smelling what the last pilot ate in the mic muff.
Yeah.
The ultimate flavor saver.
Yeah, right.
Sick.
Yeah. So that was they not only were they uncomfortable, but they were just like full of disease.
Yeah, just unsanitary. Yeah.
So that was a,
And you mentioned the Fourflight thing. It's interesting. I'm seeing a lot of students before they even sign up to fly. They haven't flown, or maybe they haven't flown in a long time, and they're getting back into it after 5 or 10 or 15 years being out of it. They already have Fourflight in the iPad. They're ready to go with it. They're like, I just saw this, and I was wowed, and I just had to buy it. So, good first step in my mind.
Oh, totally. I couldn't agree more with that stuff. Is that, I always ask one, do you have, the first thing is when somebody says, I want to take flying lessons. I say, okay, great. Do you have an iPad? Yes. Do you know a Fourflight or do you have it? Yes. It's like, good man.
There you go.
It should be easy. They've embraced the electronic charts.
So what do you think about the cheapest way, the most inexpensive way someone can go about getting their private pilot's license or any license for that matter? It pretty much applies to everything.
Well, I think that's actually a pretty good question. Something I've been pondering and working with a student right now trying to figure out. And bear with me here. It's in my mind, I think it's the cheapest way, but it requires a lot of money. Okay. So bear with me on this. There is a, as I go through it, one thing that I've started to offer to students is like, you look at rental rates on airplanes. And they're pretty expensive now, you know, well north of $100 an hour, depending on where you are and all that, unless you drive a significant amount of distance like you have to do here in Chicago, like an hour and a half to you know, get at or around $100 an hour. And it's just, you know, at that point, you really wonder, is it worth it? So here's the dilemma with that, is that, you know, when you're renting an airplane at $150 an hour, you got to do 40 hours. That's a pretty expensive thing. One, because, you know, unless you're with a flying club, you're probably renting from a business and they need to make money.
Right.
And two, it's, you know, the busier airport needs, you know, generally more expensive fuel and stuff like that.
Right.
And maintenance costs and rents and all that. So one thing that I have told a student is that, you know, it's going to require some money up front, but you'll get it back. And that's going out and buying into a partnership or a share of an airplane so that you can operate it at cost. So now, instead of operating an airplane at, you know, $150 an hour, you can operate a plane at, you know, $75 an hour.
Yeah.
And get your license in that, and then once you're done, sell your share, and you get your, you know, theoretically you get pretty close to the same amount of money that you paid back.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
That's a great idea if you can afford it. A lot of times you can finance the portion of that, you know, share. So you can be making, you know, monthly payments if that's a more affordable option. So I didn't actually think about that one. That's a good, way to just afford flying in general, you know, especially if you plan to use your license a lot or go further with it. I think that's a worthwhile investment.
Oh, totally. It's something that I personally would love to do. It's a, you know, and now you start to think about, okay, you've got a couple partners in there in your airplane and everybody's divided by four. And, you know, it's such a great way of doing it. And I think that it's a little bit different than, you know, a lot of people may say, oh, well, that's what a flying club is. But no, I'm actually talking about embracing like true aircraft ownership. Not only are you learning about what it's like to own an airplane while you're getting your license, but you know, you can share it with others. You can fly cheaply. You know, the other guy might have a pilot's license, and you may, even if you don't have a license, you could probably go up as that guy's passenger, your partner's passenger.
Absolutely.
Fly somewhere, split the cost, it's that much cheaper.
There you go. Yeah, the splitting the cost, I think, is one of the most powerful. You know, if there's some kind of matching tool, right? I mean, there are some out there, but, you know, they just don't have the community to match people up with flights. But, you know, divide the direct cost by half if you get a partner to go fly with. Couple other things I could mention, add to that, Al, is tell a little story about my multi-engine time when I was in college.
Would love it.
How, you remember how broke I was, right?
Yep, I had to buy you dinner quite a few times.
You bought me dinner a lot. You fed me in college single-handedly, not really, but I was crying poor all the time because I was broke. Every dollar I made either went towards just living or, you know, renting a car for my parents to be able to drive back and forth to the airport. So that was, so I was just broke, and I really, you and I were both very, very ambitious with our aviation goals. Well, the story is, you know, I was always hanging out at the airport, always talking to people. I was always around airplanes, whether it was cleaning them, fueling them, or just, you know, being a student flying them. And, one person gave me some advice, a guy who's an airline pilot. He said, get your ratings as fast as you can if you want to be a professional pilot. And just network, always be at the airport, and someday, you know, every chance you get, go on a free ride. And so I took his advice. I was hanging out at the airport all the time, and I just so happened to meet a guy who's going into the charter business as a cargo company flying Barons, not aircraft Barons, into a future commercial pilot. Multi-engine time is like golden, right? And they're a single pilot operation. And so what I did is I just offered them. I said, listen, I'm flight instructing. When I'm not flight instructing, I'll clean your airplanes for free. I'll do anything you want me to do. Just, you know, give me some rides and some Barons. I'd like to fly if that's possible. I'll do anything you want to for free. So he took me up on that offer. He's a new business, could use the help. I cleaned a ton of airplanes. I did a lot of work around the office, and I got almost 100 hours of multi-engine time that summer for free.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So that, you know, and that, to get, in relation to getting your license, there's a lot of creative things you can do by just networking or hanging out at the airport, and maybe you meet somebody and, you know, befriend someone, and, you know, he lets you borrow the airplane for gas. There's a lot of creative things you can do if you have a creative mind to fly cheaper.
Totally. I think that there's a, you know, if you remember, like, I would hate to call it the aviation rat race, but it kind of is. And that's that goal to get like 100 hours of multi-time.
And that, right.
That's where I think you could really get a lot, you know, creative with a lot of this stuff. And you had a pretty creative way of going about it. And, you know, if you apply that creativity, you can really, you know, to a rating or anything else, just even building time, it's, you know, the opportunities are there and you don't really have to look that hard. I know while, you know, you had your experience when I was, doing the same thing as you, you know, I went to another local airport and started, you know, just doing instruction outside of the, you know, the regular airport area, if you will, just a little bit farther out, one airport down. And, you know, people would ask to be a safety pilot, fly along, Piper Cheyenne or Conquest. It was like, it was awesome. If you're building the time that you really wanted to build as opposed to going out renting a Seminole or, you know, exactly, something like that, or trying to get multi-engine students so you didn't have to pay. And, you know, for was sure. That time really worth anything, you know, doing that? Or, you know, would you rather be flying cross-country? Who knows? Both are fine. But, you know, if you use that creativity, it pays off dividends.
Yeah, and if you want it bad enough, you'll find a creative way to make it happen. And I know it could be very expensive flying, especially as a hobby. So once I got out of flying as a profession, you know, I'm like, wow, I just need to go instruct because I don't want to have to pay, you know, so I can feel the pain. I've felt the pain before a lot, so.
Yeah.
But anything you can do creatively, just think about it. There's a lot of ways to save money and fly cheaper, get your license on the cheap.
Yeah, it's really slick. I love it. Love it. They have, and, you know, once you start doing that, I think if once you really become a, you get that entrepreneurial, like, spirit in aviation, and, you know, it's all about connecting with the people. The people are really great. It really pays off.
Another thing is a lot of, you know, maybe on the ground portion, a lot of people are just willing to help because they love aviation. They're willing to help other people out.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you need a ground school, you could pair up with some, you know, budding CFI or somebody who's getting his CFI who doesn't have it yet. Say, hey, how about you be my ground school teacher? And, you know, either it's a reduced rate or some kind of maybe free exchange to help them study for a CFI oral. You know, that's a great little way to get some, you know, ground instruction free.
Yeah, totally. I think that's awesome. You know, if you have, you know, that those opportunities out there really do exist. And, you know, there's one guy that regularly co-hosts when, Mark and myself are out, and, his name's Alex Tulis, and he goes out and really finds different, you know, he tries to figure out, like, the best deals in aviation, best personal flying, or things like that. You know, he's really good at working those, you know, finding that like little golden nugget that we're talking about, and it's just awesome, you know, just to hear other people and how they go about doing it, and it kind of inspires you to go out there and, you know, either look in the same place or, you know, it gives you an interesting twist on where to go, you know, that you have to look kind of ready.
Yep.
Yeah. It's awesome. So
has anybody texted you with other ideas or tweets or anything like that? I'd be curious if the audience has any ideas on how to reduce the expense of getting your license or flying.
Yeah, we'll throw that out there for everyone. Yeah, that's a great point. So tweet in your favorite your creative thoughts on how to get flying in and such. I'd be curious to hear. Because I think that's such an important skill to have. And, like, you know, when you start seeing, you know, $150 rental rates when north of that, or, you know, let's say, here's something that a lot of guys fall into, is, you know, they get their license in a 172 or a Piper Cherokee. All of a sudden, you know, they want to graduate their flying, right? If they're ready to take it to the next level, and they can't because, you know, the Cirrus they want to rent is $300 an hour.
Yeah.
And it's just like, man, that's a lot of money, to go that way and to rent that. So. I just got a text message and somebody mentioned, flying clubs. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, definitely. You know, clubs definitely have their place. I mean, you know, they're not, most of them are not for profit. They reduce the cost of flying.
Yeah, so one thing that I really like is that they, you know, like the non-for-profit is that, you mentioned, it really takes, you know, it takes the business element out of it. So I think the rental rates are better, but they're not necessarily great. Or let me rephrase that. The rental rates are certainly better because now, you know, people aren't trying to operate it for profit. And you at least have that cost factored out. There's another thing that happens, too, I think, with the training side of things, is that, you know, some people, the membership that's in a flying club really is motivated to be there. So if there's a CFI in the flying club, they're probably a really great CFI because, you know, it's a hobby to them. They're not there to build time or go to the airlines or something like that. And,
yeah.
You know, it maybe lowers the cost of training, even though it's flying club may lower the cost of training a little bit, but it enhances the value tenfold because of the quality of training.
That's a great point. You know, I will say in my own training as a professional pilot, the instructor made all the difference. And for those of you looking to get your license or already have it, looking for ways to maybe get your next rating or something, don't necessarily think that a cheaper instructor is better. A lot of times, you know, like Al said, they may not have your best interest in mind, and they may be not, you know, very good instructors. So just ask around. Look for people who are well known to be great teachers because you'll end up spending less money in the long run, having a better time and get your license faster and learn more. Even if it might seem like that person's hourly rate or whatever it is more, or, you know, you're flying with them more often or something. It's just, you could actually save money that way by getting a better instructor.
Yeah, no, I love it. I'm a total hippie for that, if you will. And, It's awesome. You know, you have the people that you really want to learn from, and ultimately it's going to go a long way. And, you know, if let's say aircraft ownership or a partnership isn't for you, I think that's the cheapest way of probably getting the cost down. But, you have, in a flying club, you have a membership that's, you know, behind you. And, you know, some of those people may be, you know, the membership, somebody in the membership, be honest, maybe better than one of the instructors. So you can team up with them and
sure,
probably do it for free. The person's doing it out of passion or a favor to you. And, you just see where it goes.
Yep, flying club's definite. I would look into that.
Yeah. Are there any flying clubs out in Vegas?
There are, but I'll tell you, it's they're in sore need for a good flying club. You know, one of them is smaller that I know of. The other one is disguised as a flying club, but it's actually a business. So other than that, there's not that many, and I've had the inkling to possibly start one. I can't do it on my own, so I'm looking for some good partners to get started. But Vegas is ripe for flying clubs. I know there's some great ones out in California I've heard of, and actually attended a lot of the AOPA webinars on flying clubs that, you know, you've been involved with, so it's all been great. If anybody is listening right now that's thought about there's no flying club option in their city, you know, how about this for a creative option? Go start one.
Yeah. That'd be awesome. I can guarantee you probably be able to get your license for pretty close to free.
Oh yeah.
If you start a flying club and provide that outlet.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love it. It's good stuff. They had, all that. But you know what else is good stuff?
What's that?
Our upcoming roster of guests.
Which would be who?
Well, next week we have Pat O'Malley of, he's the owner of the Jet Room, which is the Midwest, one of the Midwest's favorite airport fly-in restaurants. You know, it's funny is that this guy, yeah, he's a pilot himself, but when I asked him to come on the show, he said, oh, I don't have, you know, I don't really have much to talk about, which is an actual, it's an answer that we often get when trying to get people on the show. But, you know, think about this guy, think about an airport restaurant, Pat, that a lot of people base their flying on eating.
Oh, I know them all too well. Yeah.
Yeah. Me, myself included. You go, everything's like food-based in aviation. And here in the Midwest, that's like the place to go is the Jet Room. And, you know, it attracts a lot of people, both airside and landside, which is, you know, think about if there was a pretty popular restaurant attached to a signature flight support FBO. Like, that would do to the FBO. I mean, it's just, you know.
I can imagine.
It's pretty epic. And all that. So, you know, we're looking forward to having him on the show. After that, I'm really excited about this one on September 15th. We're having the founders of PilotFitness.com come and join us on the show.
Oh, nice. Weren't you testing out some of their services, getting some help from them?
Yeah. If there's somebody that needs help, it's definitely me. I take a lot of useful load in an airplane. And that's not a joke, but I'm dead serious about that. But I actually was on the Skype, had a Skype call with them today, and we talked about the progress and everything. And, you know, the cool thing is that they can speak, aviation because they know the difficulties of being a pilot on the road and, you know, what it's like out there. And, they've really kind of opened up some nice learning opportunities to understand about diet and how to combat and maintain a healthy lifestyle on the road. So I'm looking forward to having
very cool.
That. Yeah.
And then, a lot of people, not just pilots, could learn from that.
Totally. Totally. Like, truck drivers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good to you, Travis. Yeah.
Exactly. Then after them, we got a gentleman out in Akron, Ohio. He goes to Kent State Aviation University right now, but he is going to be joining us talking about virtual airlines. You ever heard of those?
No, I don't. Can't say I have.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting phenomenon where people like. You know, there's like virtual United Airlines or virtual Delta Airlines, and they had some people out there, you know, that basically operate, you know, an airline on Flight Simulator. You log in and you fly your flight from Vegas to Salt Lake City and, and do a plane swap and fly to San Francisco all on Flight Simulator, and you have assigned routes and you're hired. You got a chief pilot. Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Wow.
There's a whole there's a whole community out there on them.
That's pretty crazy. That's an avid enthusiast right there.
Yeah, you totally.
That was kind of redundant, but
yeah. Well, that's awesome.
Avid enthusiast.
Totally.
Cool.
Totally. So that's gonna be something nice. And on that, we've got a couple other guests in the works waiting to go. We mentioned one of them, Kermit Weeks. Hopefully, we can nail a date down with him. And, Pat, I want you to be the host when he's on the show with us.
I do too. You know why? Because during the tour down there, they told us he personally reads every comment card. And I thought, wow, that's pretty good. That's a commitment to, you know, the experience of what he's really trying to accomplish down there. So I wrote on a comment card, I said, please contact me. You know, here's my contact info. I'd really like to discuss something with you. And I never got a call back. He's just a really good, busy guy. He probably read it and it went straight to the trash can, but that's okay. And he's a busy guy.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But I would love to. He's very well known in the aviation community, and that'd be an exciting person to talk to.
Yeah, well, we'll see if we can work that out. I'm sure we can, and all that. So let's plan on it. So, but anyway, thanks for being a pinch hitter tonight and being with us on the show. It's always
fun.
It's been a year and a month since you were last on.
Wow, it's been that long?
Yeah.
Time flies.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, nice job. Nice job. Yeah, I realize you're a much better interviewer than I am. I'm really horrible at this.
I'm not. You're the conversationalist of the two of us. I'm more of the blunt. You're the conversationalist. So that's why it works out. Yeah. No, I'll just pay. You know, I'll pay you some accolades. I mean, I've known some of the guests that you've had on the show, and I think it's pretty awesome. You've been able to, you know, actually have some of the people you've had on the show. So I think it's doing a lot of great stuff in aviation and being able to connect everybody, all the masses, if you will, to some of the higher profile people in the aviation community really brings everybody together, which is pretty powerful.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Thanks for the nice words.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, anyway, that's hopefully we can get some more great people on the show. If you ever have any ideas, for our listeners having any great ideas, please let us know. You can, go to simpleflight.net, fill out, the contact form page at the bottom of the screen. You'll be able to, submit a guest request, and we'll do what we can to get them on. And as always, make sure to follow us on Twitter at simpleflight.net, Facebook as well, which is simpleflight.net. And, you can reach out to us there. We check that quite often. And that's a great way of communicating your questions, comments, or concerns while we're live on the show. So, with that being said, thanks for joining us on this Memorial, or I was going to say Memorial Day weekend, but it's not. It's the inverse, the Labor Day weekend. And once again, Pat, thanks for joining us. It's been
no
fun.
No problem. It's been fun.
Everyone, have a great, great aviation week with blue skies and strong tailwinds. Good night.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Hefner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Hefner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.